it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Welcome to our listeners today. Here in Australia, it's Thursday at 10 a.m., the 15th of April. But I'm welcoming today our international interviewees, Annie Howduck, Elizabeth Yang, and Sheena Yap-Chan. So welcome, ladies. And these ladies are the authors of a book called Asian Women Who Boss Up. Well, let's find out about each of our authors that are with us in the room today. Annie, welcome. May I please introduce you to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Tracy, for having us at the show. Myself, I actually originally born and raised in Hong Kong, and I moved to Canada 40 years ago. I see my parents like struggling financially when I was younger with a family of 11, and that's why I was really at the early stage. I believe that I have to get financially independent and finding a way to get a better life. And that's what I was really focusing on, getting higher education. And that's why I came to Canada. And right now I actually have been running a children learning center for 10 years here in Canada. And because of COVID, the pandemic, so I've been pivoted online for 1 year now. So I'm really comfortable in engaging young children online and teaching them mental math based on the ancient Chinese calculation tool. It's called the abacus. And that's what I do. And then also offer like after-school program to private school. And because now I'm not bound by the geographic location, so I'm planning to bring the program globally. Because especially in Asia, this method of training that benefits not just in mathematics, but is the child's brain development. That's what I right now that's interested in bringing it to the world. And also I collaborate with other educators, those who wanted to transform education. Yes.
Thank you very much, Annie. So you're in Canada.
Yes, I've been located in Canada for 40 years.
Wow, that's wonderful. I hope to go there next year. I've been invited to be a keynote speaker at a large science medical convention, so I really hope to go there.
Yeah, I'm near Toronto. Yeah, Toronto.
Oh, that's where I'm going.
Is that where you're going?
That's where I'm going.
Big All great. Right, we'll meet in person.
Meet next year. Yes, May next year. Thank you, Annie, for sharing your information and that you tutor in education with the abacus, which is something that I hold dear to myself as an educator of 38 years. So we'll talk about that later. But let's introduce Elizabeth Yang now. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hello, Tracy. Welcome. Yes, thank you so much for having us here today. So I'm in Los Angeles. We're all in different parts of the world. Yes, and I am an attorney and business owner here in Los Angeles. Our law firm specializes in several different areas of law, one of them especially being family law. So in my book, I share about how I used to be an engineer and I transitioned into family law because I went through my own divorce. which lasted for quite some time. It was a 4-year process. You know, when I started it, I definitely didn't think it would take that long. But the divorce process of it is a very complicated process. And even though I was already a lawyer, it was very confusing to me. So I can't even imagine how non-lawyers go through that process. And now in my practice, I help folks who are going through the same process I've been through, but I use the term collaborative divorce with them. I specialize in mediation, and I help parties try to work through their issues amicably, especially if they have children. You know, I tell them that you guys are going to be in each other's lives for a very long time, because you're going to be family no matter what, even if you get the divorce finalized, right? There's going to be weddings to attend together, graduations, you're going to be grandparents together. So it's not a good idea to be fighting and being negative and ugly with this person who's going to be in your extended family. So I use what I've learned in my own process and tell them this is what to do and what not to do. Don't make the same mistakes that I did in my divorce and spend all the money that we've saved and hard earned on our attorney fees.
That sounds like a very good message. And I'm hearing what you're saying about mediation. I work with a lot of people in both corporate and private companies. And mediation is one of the biggest gaps that is missing everywhere, even in government organisations. The fact that people are not trained in mediation and therefore they avoid it, which causes more problems and escalates it. So that sounds interesting. Thank you for sharing your information, Elizabeth. That's really good to hear.
Yeah, of course.
In LA. And Sheena, yep, Jan, welcome, Sheena. Lovely to see you on Tracy Tully Talks this morning. How are you?
Hi, Tracy. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here today. Like Annie, I am also just outside of Toronto. I think me and Annie are probably like less than an hour away from each other. But because we have lockdowns currently, we're not allowed to really see each other in person. So a little bit about me. I am a keynote speaker, a coach, a best-selling author and award-winning podcaster on building self-confidence. And everything started out with my podcast called The Tao of Self-Confidence, where I interview Asian women about their journey to self-confidence. And part of the reasons why I did that was because growing up with my own confidence issues, I could not find any support systems or any resources where I could deal with my confidence issues that was catered to Asian women. So a part of me was like, am I crazy that I'm the only one going through this? Like, I'm the only one who has these thoughts, these issues. But because how we're brought up, we don't talk about our issues. We don't talk about how we feel. I felt like I was the only one dealing with it. And second, representation. For me, representation is really important. Growing up in Canada in the early 90s, I never had any Asian female role models to look up to. There was no one on TV, on billboards, on magazines. So I always thought being Asian was something bad, or I just didn't feel like I was worthy enough to go and do something that was out of the ordinary. And so by sharing the stories of Asian women from around the world with different careers, different backgrounds, it just showcases what it really means to be a strong Asian woman, to have multifaceted Asian women. Because part of the things I really want to do is dismantle the model minority myth, where society thinks all Asian or women are quiet, submissive, and obedient. And we're totally not that. And that's one of the reasons why we even have the book Asian Women Who Boss Up, because you'd never see books that highlight 16 Asian women on a cover of a book. And that's very powerful, right? There was a report where they said if women see other women in leadership, they're 86% more likely to go on their own and do the same thing. So this is why, for me, representation is huge, because they see what's possible for themselves. And so I also help women break out of their shell so they can live a authentic life and thrive. Because as Asian women, we've been told all our lives to just do as you're told, never make any noise, just stay in the background. And because of that, literally our silence is killing us, you know, especially with what's been going on in the pandemic. Women are likely targeted 2.5 times more than men when it comes to an Asian hate crime. So it's really important for women to speak up, right? Even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's scary. I mean, you know, we're here today, we're just as scared too, but we realize like it's definitely needed, because we need role models for our current and future generations. And we want to show them what's possible. We want to help them understand, like, yes, it's scary, but nothing changes if we don't do anything.
I love what you represent in terms of being a voice, and you are all, as authors, a voice. And the fact that you have said that there is no book similar to this with depicting a large number of Asian women leaders, that is a concern, a huge concern. And I'm very proud of you all. And Denise has shared a lot about the book with me. It's amazing because I can actually identify with a lot of what you're saying, even though I'm not Asian. I was born in Penang in Malaysia. And mm-hmm. so purely by my birthplace, I have, over my years, I'm 60, I have received a lot of weird perception around me. I can only imagine a small amount of what you experience as a group or a targeted group. I remember, here someone's coming in. No, we've lost her. that could be our Lisa. But I can understand you because it never seemed to amaze me how warped people's perceptions are. I'm a very blunt speaker. I'm a two-times whistleblower. I don't know if Denise has shared with you my background. I'm a big, big voice. And fear is a problem for 90% of people, whether they're male or females, but in particular with target groups. So you are Asian women. So women, for a start, we know is a huge target group. But the fact that your birthright also dictates that what I call, and it's a horrible word, but it's a very relevant word, bastardization, which means demeaning, devaluing, and which can lead to this hate belief. And it gets whipped up through gossip and malicious discussion, which is so wrong and has no founding base on anything. So I hear you very, very strongly, all of you, and I'm so, so honoured to have you all on my interviews. It really is something that excites me, and I'm very pleased that you're all here as a voice. So now what we can do is I'd like to go around the room just one more time and ask you each personally what your challenge was with the book. So if I may start with you, Annie, again, what was your challenge in writing your chapter for the book, International Women of Color Who Boss Up?
In terms of the book content, I just talked about the life vision, that everyone really need to find their life vision. Then every single decision that they make becomes a lot easier, right? Because if they clearly know where they wanted to go, then it can compare whether choosing A or B, right? Whether it's going to get you closer or getting you further away, right? So it's, I think it's more around the life experience that I had, that the struggles that I had, and I feel like I lived a few different lives at a time. Yeah, well, because I might look like that way, but I'm actually going to turn 59 this year. I have my life is almost every 18 years, there's a huge change in my life, right? That's why from the Asian Women Who Boss Up, what I find is I was surprised that I got to connect with all these other co-authors, and that's become a community that. So what I didn't expect, because I actually have moved into this small town that I've been living for the past 27 years. Only a handful of really Chinese living there. It's all very it's a Caucasian town that I'm in. So being able to be in the Asian Women Who Boss Up, I just felt as if I just getting a new family, and they're very supportive, right? Because through the book is hearing the other story, I think it really help and be grateful, right? Everyone go through all these different obstacles in being a right?
That's wonderful news, and that's exactly right. I actually publish co-author books, and I'm in the process of doing one now called Queens in Sand Castles. And of course For me, I'm from the Australian bush, what we call the outback, very remote rural areas. I spent virtually all my life in those. And you can imagine, as an outspoken woman who's very true to her own beliefs, working and growing up in these sorts of areas has been extremely difficult. And the challenges that I continued to come across basically really showed me that out in these male-dominated areas, we had no voice. And so I had this title for this book called Queens in Sandcastles, because out there where I come from, they have these big red sand dunes, desert. It's the desert out there, the camel desert type of desert, but it's red sand dunes. And so for me, it was queens in sandcastles, so the shifting sands of time. And someone had to bring forward the voice of women, exactly like what you're doing. Somebody has brought you together, and what a wonderful thing it has been. And it's your vision that was the challenge for you. And from that, you've developed into a nurturing, empowered, a community of women writers and leaders. Love it. Thank you, Annie. Elizabeth, what was your biggest challenge in writing for this book?
You know, I've actually published quite a bit of books. This is my fifth book that I've published. So I've shared my various stories of my life so many different times. This book, it wasn't very challenging to share because I've been through the process. But I do remember when I published my first book, it was very challenging to be able to share a struggle that's very personal to my heart and put it on paper and publish it to so many readers and put it out in the public domain. You know, it's actually very, it's a very big step of vulnerability, you know, because we want to help others. But by sharing ourselves, it's sort of like we're taking ourselves out of the safe zone and putting ourselves out there. But then after that first time I've done it, I'm like, you know, this is the right thing to do, because we're inspiring so many other women, so many other folks that can become great leaders, and that and they share the same stories as us. So we're not alone in any of the struggles we go through life. And when we share our stories, it inspires and motivates others to open up and own their voice and share it too. So no matter how difficult and challenging it is, it's definitely the right step.
That's great. So your first book, was that about your divorce? Was that about that?
It is, yeah. It was about my divorce and then also other challenges in my life, like my father committed suicide when I was very young. So that was another struggle that I was unwilling to share for the longest time, and then finally came up with the courage to share about that story too.
That's big. And I can understand it, because I wrote my first book, was a nonfiction book about being a 2 times whistleblower, and it had to be written for the legacy of my children. That was my motivator, because I experienced really malicious bullying at a degree that was highly political. And if it wasn't for some brilliant people around me, like detective inspectors of police and doctors who were able to share highly important information that helped me to understand that really I was just a victim of a huge political campaign against me, and it took me a long time to realize why was I singled out. But it was highly political, and it was about the elections. It was about taking me down, taking me out of the picture as a senior high school principal, a long-serving principal, taking me out of the picture and putting in a party favored political principal. That's what it was about. And it took me a long time to understand it. So I can hear you, because every time you write a word, each and every one of us, when we write a word, it's there forever. And our children have to grow up with that. Now, my children suffered huge bullying. My son was bashed up badly as a 10-year-old, and he just got out of hospital for 3 months with meningitis. So he wasn't well. And so this malicious, as I use the term, and once again, it's a jarring, horrible term, bastardization, it filtered in through the town and gave people permission to do whatever they wanted, physically and emotionally and abusive-wise. And so a carload of parents, women,
parents drove Carlo's children to school students, my seniors, to his school and bashed him up just as a payback for nothing, really. There was nothing to pay me back for. Those people were charged and convicted. So it was very, very difficult for me to actually finish the writing the book and publishing it, because you know that that information is being shared with everyone and you know that that's going to hurt people. Well done and congratulations for your courage, and what a great role model. I'm really impressed. Sheena, tell me, what challenges did you experience going through your writing this book?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the challenges I went through was really because this idea of creating Asian women who boss up came from me and another lady named, her name's Tam Luck, who's been the mastermind behind the whole Women Who Boss Up series. And we actually, this book actually just came out of a conversation we had. And we just said, let's make this book. I'm like, okay, let's make it. But I didn't know how to do it or what to do. And the challenges was like even trying to find women who would be brave enough to share their story, right? As Asian women, we're very afraid to share our story because of how we're brought up. You know, most of us are told not to share our story. We don't want to shame the family name. We don't want any of our dirty laundry aired. But sometimes we really need to share our stories so that other people can realize we're not going through bad stuff alone. Like, we all go through bad stuff and it's okay. We don't have to be perfect. You know, we can show up as a messy person because we all have some form of mess in our lives, right? Especially in this time of the pandemic, it's a hot mess. So really, that was my challenge, just bossing up in my own way to get this book done. I mean, we were committed. We just, even if it took a year or two to get the women who were brave enough, I'm glad it didn't, of course. I'm glad it's out. And that, you know, I've met these amazing women who have gone through so many challenges and roadblocks and was able to pick themselves back up. It just also inspires me to keep on going, right? And that's all it takes. It just takes one person's story, because we can at least relate to one person's story that can help us kind of push through our own journeys. So yeah, my challenge wasn't really the writing. It was more like getting this book together, because I've never done that ever, right? I had no clue, but I'm glad we did it. And the best part is I didn't have to do it alone, right? It was with someone else. And I think we have to understand, like, you know, doing things together makes it a lot better than doing it on your own, right? My grand uncle actually recently passed last week. And one of the things he said was that you can be the most talented person in the world, but, you know, it's always still better to work as a team.
Mm-hmm. Wise words, and great words too, because it's true. It's nothing lonelier than working on your own in isolation. And we've all had that proved to us. For me, isolation from the places I've lived was easy, but isolation in pandemic was a whole different ball game.
Oh, yeah.
Being locked up in your house. I was isolation. I was out in the bush, so I could get out. I could get out in the fresh air and out in the night sky, and there's no one around for hundreds of miles. That didn't worry me. But being locked up in your house, totally different ball game. That isolation was different. So now, if I may open up the room to us all to speak, one of the questions I'd like to ask you as a group, what do you hope to do, as a community, in using your book and leveraging this book to help others? Can you all share with me what you think? I'm just going to open the room so anyone can speak at any one time.
Yeah, I can start. I mean, really, we just want this book to get into as many women's hands as possible, not just Asian women, because, you know, all, as women, we all face similar situations. We all face similar, you know, judgments and biases, and learning from others, you know, can make a huge difference. And also, because of what's been happening around the world with the rise of Asian hate crimes, we definitely want these books out there to showcase that, you know, we're human, right? Stop, you know, they need to stop dehumanizing Asian women. They have to realize we're not quiet. We're not submissive. We can be entrepreneurs. We can go out there and do our own thing. We can show up as a messy person. And the more people can read these stories, because these stories are amazing. I mean, I've read the whole book and I love it, you know, just reading each and every person's story, things that I never even knew was possible. I mean, I'll have one little spoiler, like, I didn't know in some universities or colleges in America, you can actually create your own degree. As long as you have the proof and the thesis to make sure that this is considered a valid degree, you can do it because one of the ladies did it in our book. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. I didn't even know that was possible, but we wouldn't have known that if, you know, one of the ladies didn't share it in the book. So, I mean, yeah, for us, it's just putting ourselves out there. It's not easy, of course. You know, we do get rejected. I mean, it's all part of life, but we just got to keep picking ourselves back up and keep moving forward. And life is tough, right? Like I mentioned, I had a family member who actually had two family members passed away, but you know, we have that moment of grieving and mourning, but at some point we got to like pick ourselves back up because life goes on and we still got a lot of work to do. Right. I was reading the this article from Reuters, right. And one of the article was about saying in a post pandemic world, to have a successful one is to have more women leadership. And I totally believe that, right. Especially with how women leaders have handled this pandemic, like they've been able to handle it very well, that like that's proof. But one thing they also said that at the rate we're going, it's going to take 130 years to achieve gender parity. And there's no way in hell that I want to wait that long to achieve gender. I don't think anybody in this panel or listening would want to wait 130 years. And so I want people to realize like 130 years is a very long time. So we really got to, you know, pick ourselves back up, really boss up and start creating the change that we deserve. And that means, you know, helping women rise up, because as women, we also face a huge confidence gap where even though we over prepare to a T, something still holds us back. It is how we perceive ourselves. And the more we can realize how capable we are, like we're more capable than we realize, we can go out there and do amazing things.
Excellent. What about other ladies? What would you like to see as a community in terms of how you leverage this book to help others?
Well, I think for, you know, all 16 of us authors, we're mainly entrepreneurs, business owners, and that's why the title Boss Up. And I think this inspires other females and women leaders out there that they can do it too. You know, if they have a great idea or their vision to create something, a new business, you know, anything, they see that, okay, oh, these other women of color have done it too. So why can't they do it? Right. So it's like a stepping stone. Once you see that it's been done, then it's easy to repeat again and again. And so for those folks out there who are afraid to take that big step out of their comfort zone and make their dream happen, hopefully after they read our story, they're going to take those action steps and create their dreams into reality.
Great. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Annie?
Yes. For me, I would say I hope that using this book actually is already giving us a lot of opportunity to speak up. Like, we're being invited on your show, and we have been on other show too. And that's given us the opportunity to let other Asian women know that we can boss up. Like, even though I have been being my own boss for, at least 25 years or more, but I have also worked in the corporate world. So I notice how, like, especially Asian women, we don't like really speak up, like just because the way of the culture that we have been. So it's that image that we're not really assertive in the corporate world as much, right? So, but I know lots of it's the work ethic. Like, I notice the difference between culture and even parenting styles are different. But I wanted to have that voice to now being able to go out and saying women, Asian women can be leaders and we can be very powerful, because I always see like when everyone working together, and there's like actually 18 of us in this book about this connection. And if 18 of us sharing our connection, that's already very powerful. And to me, I actually did come across a racism that I never had the guts to say anything, because I've been, you know, having two companies in my small town that I could not really able to say it, because it is really affecting, you know, my business. But after the release of the book and because of the pandemic, that I can now go global. I'm not like my business no longer just relying on the local market. And now I want to take the opportunity to let others know that how to even deal with the racism instead of like fighting, harshly or you know, get out of that negative mode, because you have to get yourself emotionally off from that before you can think of even a rational strategy to do it. So I actually came across the racism when I first started moving into a town that I didn't know anyone. And that was a challenge when I decided to start up a business with my son. My newborn son, he was just not even 2 years old. And I decided, that was in 1996, and internet was the thing. So I started an internet-based business, but didn't know any customer. But I got the racism comment from one of the town council. Right? That really started to say, wow, that I because of that power, I just feel that I would not be able to really smoothly create my business, right? My business was just 2 years old. So I changed my strategy with, I immerse into the community. So I started to just network and actually started my own networking group, and it's now 25 years. So instead of seeing, getting others to, being affected by the others, I actually know your enemy, know your friend, become friends of them. So get them to know you. So no more of these gossips affect me anymore, because I proved by my actions. So being in different communities, so because over time it wins, right? Because even rumor people, they might judge you just by listening to someone else, but when they see all the activities that you do, all the good deeds you do, what can they say, right? So that's how what I learned, and that's what I did.
It's wonderful to hear how you're speaking together as a team, and it is a big team, big powerful team, about changing racism. So we're using some words today that people don't like to hear, do they? Or they don't want to know about, but it's real and it's there. And changing how, my next question to the group would be, how do we literally and realistically start making that change against racism? Do we start in schools? Can I throw that one out for you? Is it schools that we need to start in? Who would like to go first?
Oh, yeah. I definitely, I'm a huge proponent of education. So I definitely think that everything starts with schools. And I've done a lot of research on this. Our public school system was designed back in the day, hundreds of years ago, to create a working class. It wasn't to create bosses. It wasn't to create entrepreneurs and leaders. It was to create people who can work and have a working class for the economy and for civilization. And so the things they teach in school are basic stuff so that you can become a worker. They teach you math, English, writing, history, but they don't teach anything about emotional intelligence. There's no leadership courses. There's no money management courses. They don't want you to figure out how to manage your money and make a lot of money in your lifetime, just enough to get by. There's no courses about conflict resolution, how to have a successful marriage, how to be good parents and parent well. All of that stuff that is so important in life is all taught through trial and error. And that's right, the divorce rate is so high right now. Where I am is 65%. Domestic violence is so high, bullying is so high, depression and suicide rates are so high. It's because no one is taught to cope with all the challenges that we as human beings go through in life. And I just feel like if we put as much of a curriculum and emotional intelligence as we do in math and other academic subjects, the world would be such a much better place. There'd be a lot more peace and less crime and less violence and less unhappy people. And it really just comes down to our education system.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Elizabeth, because our systems across the world were created in the Industrial Revolution. And therefore, you're correct. Everyone is taught to be servants, aren't they? To work for someone else. No one is taught to really be a leader. I mean, until probably you get to the final years where you have your leadership captains, oh, heaven forbid, it might take you 12 years to get there, and all of a sudden they don't know really what to do because no one teaches them what to do. It's a tag on your shirt and it's lip service, and that's about it. But if we're really looking at talking about leadership and really doing something against racism in particular and bullying, because they both go hand in hand, then it needs to start right down at the beginning, and we need to teach our children that they need to stand up as leaders and individual leaders, and what leadership means, those traits that we see in leadership. Sheena, you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the same thing that Elizabeth was saying. You know, it does start in the schools. I mean, history books doesn't even talk about what happened to our community when they migrated to America, right? Nobody ever talks about the Chinese Exclusion Act that happened in America or Japanese people being in camps in Hawaii. And so most people think nothing bad happens to us, but really a lot of things happen to us. It's just nobody talks about it. And, you know, because we don't, even when the crime started, it wasn't on mainstream media. It's like nobody really wanted to talk about it. I don't know if it's because there wasn't enough trainings or it wasn't controversial enough, but it had to take one shooting to realize this has been an ongoing problem for the longest time. And so that's why it's so important for us to speak up, because nobody else is doing it for us. And the more people are speaking up for it, the more they can open their eyes and be like, oh, yeah, this is a problem. We really need to step out. Like, we really need to talk about this, bring awareness to it so we can find solutions and start working towards the right direction, right? Solving these problems, being in solidarity and ending racism.
I hear you. And it's bringing back something to me that I know will shock anyone and everyone hearing this today. But I'm going to say it because it is shocking. My father was in the Air Force, and he was in the Air Force for quite a two periods of time, two tours of duty, so to speak, and then the Second World War, and then again in the Malaysian campaign. We were born in Penang in Malaysia, and he's based at Butterworth there. So originally he was in there in the Air Force as a pilot, and then the second time he got cerebral malaria when he left, and then he retrained as a doctor and went in as a doctor. And I remember years and years and years after he left the Air Force, he sat me down one day, and in Australia, I'm sure they have them all over the world, they have a census form that you have to fill in with all your details, so they've got track of you, obviously, and it's updated. And Dan, I'll never forget this to my day, that he sat me down, he said, Tracy, you have to be really, really careful and very, very aware of what you put on your census form. And bear in mind, he was from the armed forces. And he said to me, and I said, why? He said, because you were born in Malaya. And on a piece of paper, you are just a name. But where you were born in a time of war, for example, if there were issues between Malaysia and Australia, he said, you would be segregated, you would be excluded purely. They wouldn't bother looking at you. It would be about your birthright, where you were born. And it never left me. I never forget it, because I thought, is this how bad it is? Is this how bad it was? And yes, it was. If we look back to World War II and the Holocaust and what they did to the Jewish people, it went on where you were born. It went on where you were registered for some of them. Yeah, and so we see over history and time these tragedies, these tragic things that happen. And once again, it comes back to that perception, and it comes back to that malicious talk and gossip that perpetrates it and sits behind it. Thank you, Sheena. It's all about confidence, isn't it? It's definitely about giving others confidence. Annie, what would you like to say about this question about education?
Yes. I think the education part, children, like you start from the young age, that educate them about, like, knowing about racism. But not just that, it's about the parents too, because parents are normally the role model, right? So because even the parents not saying it in front of the kids, the kids sense it, right? like just a minor little thing. But like, because if they do, like, you know, look down on a certain race or, you know, not liking, so they sense it. And also sometimes it just, like initially I just thought it's the older generation. I actually married a Caucasian. So, you know, my mother-in-law, like, she like, really, it just, like, because she didn't know, because it was from her, rooted with, like, her culture, that she worry about, like, children that being mixed race. Yeah, you know, that's the same issue that with my dad, that before I even came to Canada, he said, like, make sure you don't date a, you know, non-Chinese, right? So that's the issue, is like thinking about the next generation, right? So that those like rooted, like those kind of education, like start from home, that if those adults, like they all also being educated, then when the kids, when they get to the school, they already have that foundation at least, right? So they know right or wrong when the other kids like saying something that's like a racial comments, right? So I think it's that that's the problem with the education system too, is the communication between parents and students and the teacher, right? So it wasn't a racist comment, but I just give you an example that when my son was like in elementary school, right? Like I think it's just grade one. Like, you know, he said, like, words that is just like whatever he is around him, right? He would just throw out these words that, you know, really children like shouldn't be saying. And then I was talking to his classroom teacher, and then she said, you know what? All, like, any words will come out in the classroom because the kids hear what their parents say, right? Like, whatever genital, like, every word they just came out, right? Because if they hear it as a normal thing that like their parents say, then they think that it is okay, right? So what the teacher actually told me, you can't really put a bubble in your child because they got to experience it. Like they will hear it from anywhere, right? So the best way is like you educate your kid, right? Like, so parents has that responsibility too, not just the education system.
Yep. And you are correct. The parents do have that responsibility. And as well as the education system. And we do need that interact, don't we? Because if we don't, we also know that there's some horrific families out there and there's some horrific and tragic things happening to children in their own homes. And as an educator in very violent schools, predominantly I only worked in violent schools, high drugs, high alcohol, very chaotic. Families that came to school every day, and I literally, as a principal, probably spent my whole day counselling whether it was children, teachers, or parents. And it was almost like a dentist surgery. The admin officers used to joke about it, next appointment, next, and it wasn't a joke. It was quite frightening, and it's hidden. It's all hidden. No one wants to know about it. But what I would hear would horrify me, and kids would come to me and share their rapes and their fetishes and their abuse and what was happening to them at home. And they would tell me that, you know, if their parents were drug runners, exactly the details of the drop-offs and places and everything. So I'd report it to the police, obviously. And I had no hesitation reporting it to the police. You live in a small community, you start doing that, and they want to get you very, very quickly, get you out of the system. And that's this malicious belief, isn't it? The racism is the bullying, and we'll get you because that's all they can think of to do. And it is horrific. And my heart goes out to you all for your experiences that you have had to overcome to get to this point. And I'm really impressed. I'm just so excited that you've chosen to come here to BBS Radio and speak with me. And so my next question is, what will you each do individually by leveraging this book to help your cause, so to speak? Elizabeth, can we start with you perhaps?
Absolutely. So I'm planning on sharing this book with all of my clients. You know, my clients are all going through either domestic violence cases where they need restraining orders or child custody, child support cases. I'm especially going to give it to the ones who are parents, because like Annie said, you know, parents makes a huge impact in their children's lives. And a lot of times, like, even though parents have such a big responsibility, no one's ever taught them how to be parents too. You know, I'm a parent myself. I've got two kids, and every day I'm just doing trial and error and hoping I'm doing the best I can. But, you know, I'm definitely not the perfect parent. I don't think there's any perfect parents out there. And, you know, it's a challenge raising kids all the time. We just hope they will come out to be great human beings and not end up being, you know, criminals. But I hope by sharing this book with my clients who are parents, they will be able to utilize it and be inspired and want to create a better world for a future generation.
Excellent. That's good. I agree with you. I think you have a powerful book here. And so I'm going to ask you, what can I do for you? As a group, what can I do? I'm a big voice and I have no fear in using my voice. Is there something I can do for you as a group, for the authors in this book, that would help your cause? Is there anything that you might like to, you know, ask me that I could do to help you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you know anybody who would benefit from this book, any TV stations that want to highlight us, you know, the more media, the better, right? In order for us to get the messages across is to be visible, right? On all different types of platforms, whether it's a speaking engagement, a TV station, a podcast interview, a radio interview, because we really want this book to really help so many women out there. And right now, like you mentioned, right? Like I mentioned before, asking help was not something we do, but now we're asking for it. So, and since you offered, we're going to ask.
Exactly. Great. That's what I was hoping. Sheena, can you follow up now quickly? I am watching the time. What will you be doing with this book as a businesswoman?
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to get in more workshops, especially with what's been going on, really educate them that, you know, who Asian women are and what we do and, you know, who we are as a human being, right? Because with what's been going on, we're not even treated as the basic, you know, human rights as a person. And so me, I'm just going to be as loud as I can, put myself out there, even if it's tough, even if it's scary. I share this so that people understand that even though we're here talking to you, we're also just as scared. We also have our doubts. We also have our fears, but we keep going anyway because we understand there's a bigger purpose to it.
I love it. I love it. No matter what, no matter how turbulent times get, you stand strong and you unite and you work together. I just love that. Annie, what will you do as an individual and how will you leverage this book to help others?
Yes, like with this book, actually, I wanted to bring it to like help me to get recognized in the world of business, like being in the leadership, and also about education that I actually think of growing global, but the first stop is in Asia, just because of the their value of education is very high. They're willing to invest in children's education. So I actually wanted to have the book to help, like, to also transforming education. So that's why I actually already partnered with Tam, our publisher, to come up with the next series, which is Women Who Boss Up in STEM plus Arts. So it comes to STEAM, right? Science, technology, engineering, at the arts, and also mathematics, right? Mm. Yes.
I like that STEAM because I, as a principal, when I heard STEM, I thought, what a hullabaloo. It should not be can we do it or it's wonderful. We should be doing it. It should be part of what we're doing. There shouldn't be any, oh, we need to do this. We just do it. We don't need to ask permission to talk. We do it. And STEAM, when I first saw STEAM, I thought, oh, at last, because the arts is equally important, isn't it? Equally yes. important. That's yes. where we get our voice from.
Yes, because I promote a whole brain training, like whole child like development. And also, I actually used to do a summer STEAM camp. That's how the name I came up. It's like I do a one-day STEAM camp and I get a scientist And the library has the robotics, so we got them in, and also music teacher that has all the different instruments. They brought into my place, and then I do the math, right? So that's the name I came up with, Summer STEAM Camp.
I love it because you know what? That is, you take that philosophy of STEAM, and then you take what you're saying in your book, and you put it together, and you'll teach children 1,000 times stronger with those two enmeshed. I tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to offer you all individual interviews, if I may. I would like to interview each and every one of you. I would like to explore and dive deep into your challenges, your experiences, and how you're going to do it, because I believe in my heart that if someone doesn't take the banner, and I call this passing the banner, I refer to this in my business as passing the baton. I take it as my responsibility to help others get their voice out. And if there's anything I can do, I will do it. So I'd like to offer and invite each of you to interview with me separately to be able to get that story out. And as we move through the next couple of interviews where every author will be talking to me, this is what I hope and desire to do. And I said this to Denise, I said, let's do it this way first. Let's have the groups of ladies in here, but let's go one step better. And then I think we can go one step better even again. So I know I use my, and I probably can't grab it in a hurry here because it's packed away ready for a big trip I'm doing, but have you thought about doing a code on your ebook? A code, like a QR code. That's what I've done. So I've turned my ebook into a QR code link. So no matter where I go, I can have it on my phone and say, here, take a photo of that. That's my ebook. Use it. Use it. Read it. Share it. Because we all want to make money out of our books, but we also know that it's like a business card on steroids, isn't it?
Yeah,
our books are business cards on steroids. And it took me a long time to get that my book was quite frightening to write. It was really frightening. And for my children, it was difficult because it was putting it out there. But then again, they're very proud of me. And they're so proud of me, so very proud of me. And I think that's what I needed. That's all I needed was that permission really from them, that they felt safe with that book out there. And it has changed. Yes, some of those kids that bashed my son have actually apologized. Some of those girls that bullied my daughter have actually apologized to her as adults. There's real change that can happen. So we've got a couple of more minutes to just whip around the room again quickly before we leave, but I will be contacting you, each and every one of you, and I can't wait to take these conversations further. So can I start with you, Sheena? Can you tell me, is there a message you like to leave? We've got 3 minutes, 1 minute each, ladies.
Yeah, I mean, life is short, you know, make it as meaningful as possible and live a good life as possible because you never know what's going to happen.
Thank you. Brilliant. Elizabeth.
Challenges are blessings in disguise. So when you're going through a thunderstorm, learn to dance in it and accept it, embrace it, because there is a rainbow at the end.
Love it. Annie.
Yeah. I would say have a life vision really clear, and then everything will be easy and you don't have to stress about little thing anymore. Yes. But thank you, Tracy, for this opportunity. I really appreciate what you're giving us the opportunity.
My pleasure, ladies. And I'll pick up Liza at our next one. So thank you so much for coming on board, for agreeing to speak with me. I know it can be challenging speaking out, but I also know that I feel the courage and I feel the confidence and I feel the strength in you all, and our listeners need to hear that. And the sharing across the nations, across the borders, across the cultures is very, very important. So thank you so much. Very, very informative. And have a think of that QR code. Talk to your community about it, because that's a powerful, powerful thing that I do. And someone taught me that. Do this. And I thought, oh, okay then. So if you struggle with it, let me know and I'll tell you how to do it. But for all our listeners today, wherever you are in the world, today you are hearing three authors from the book Asian Women Who Boss Up. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed listening to you, and all the very best. So it's goodbye from me here at Tracy Tully Talks, bbsradio.com, and have a wonderful week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence, and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.